Well, greetings everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and around the world in more than 120 countries worldwide daily over the Internet. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on freedom of speech when we come back. You know, once in a while we get a glimpse of the real world through the eyes of an insider like John Swinton, for instance. Swinton was the guest of honor at a banquet given to him by the leaders of his craft back in 1880. And someone who knew neither the press nor John Swinton offered a toast to the independent press. And Swinton absolutely outraged all of his colleagues by replying that there's no such thing at this date of world's history in America as an independent press. Now you know it and I know it, he said. And there's not one of you who dares to write your honest opinions, and if you did, you know beforehand that it would never appear in print. Now, I'm paid daily, he said, for keeping my honest opinion out of the paper that I'm connected with. And others of you are paid similar salaries for similar things. And any of you who would be so foolish as to write your honest opinions would be out on the streets looking for another job. Now, if I allowed my honest opinions to appear in one issue of my paper, before 24 hours, my occupation would be gone. The business of the journalist is to destroy the truth, to lie outright, to pervert, to vilify, to fawn at the feet of mammon, and to sell his country, and to sell his race for his daily bread. Now, you know it, and I know it. And what folly is this toasting of an independent press? We are the tools and vassals, he said, of rich men behind the scenes. And we're the jumping jacks, and they pull the strings, and we dance. Our talents, our possibilities, and our lives are all the property of other men. We are intellectual prostitutes. Now, you know, these rich men behind the scenes are the movers and shakers of the Global 2000 program, this New World Order. The men and families like the Windsors and Rockefellers and Bushes and Bundys and Carnegies and Vanderbilts. That's why I contend it's time to wise up and start listening more to the God of Abraham and stop following after all these crazy scientists, philosophers, preachers, and politicians, and let's prepare to live through and survive this New World Order, this Global 2000 insanity. Now, if you'd like to learn more about Global 2000, Bible prophecy, and this New World Order, why don't you call and order our free General Law CD package. Remember, it's educational, it's entertaining, it's informative. Best of all, it's free. You can call and order one right now. The number is 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email machine. Send us an email request for that free General Law CD package. Once more, that's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. Why don't you do it right now while you're thinking about it before you forget. All right, we've been talking about this thing of freedom of speech, and last time I said we'd take a look at this thing of title, superior title. It is true when you have an automobile, you get a piece of paper from the state and it says title. Take a look again at that piece of paper, and it's going to say Certificate of Title. Certificate of Title. Now, what that's telling you is that there is a title someplace, but you don't have it. This is a certificate. This is evidence of the title. This tells you that there is title somewhere. Now, the average Joe Sixpack, when he has a piece of paper in his hand that says Certificate of Title, says, well, that's my car. After all, he went down to the dealer and he bought it and paid for it. Well, the truth of the matter is, he bought it, but he didn't pay for it. He thought he paid for it, but he didn't. he discharged the obligation in equity. And that's why back in the New Deal days, they suspended gold payments and gave us commercial paper. It comes under the Uniform Commercial Code, and that's all part and parcel with this thing called title and superior title. And it dovetails with a thing called property and property rights. Now, when Moses came down off of Mount Sinai, he came down with two tables of stone. One of the commandments, one of the basic tenets and principles in Anglo-Saxon administration is your right to property. And it's guaranteed by a simple law, thou shalt not steal. Just four words, thou shalt not steal, guarantees your right to property. Now, we have strayed from the Ten Commandments, and now we practice the Ten Planks to the Communist Manifesto. The first plank to the Communist Manifesto calls for the abolition of all right to property. Abolition, all right to property. That's what we practice in the United States of America. And furthermore, that's what you practice wherever you live in the world. And that's because the right to property, as an adjunct to the Ten Planks to the Communist Manifesto, is the rule of law worldwide. Everybody practices that. Everybody's practicing the Ten Planks to the Communist Manifesto, including all of us in the Anglo-Saxon Western world. Now, as a result of that, we've lost our property rights. We still talk about property. We still deal in property. People still have some bundle of rights that we call property, but they have been altered. They've been altered to commercial law. Commercial law. That's Article 1, Section 8 of our Constitution, which deals with commerce. Congress has the power to deal with commerce. And when Congress, or your state legislature, or your city council, or your county commissioners, when those people are making laws, they are dealing in commerce. Nothing more, nothing less. They're not dealing in your property rights. They're dealing in the state's property rights. All right, so let's take a little sachet through this concept of title, the Uniform Commercial Code, and property. And let's see what we come up with. The Constitution of the United States is a contract or agreement among the states, and it was adopted in a benign form, finally not applying to nor prejudicing the state citizen in any way. And this made it impossible for the states themselves and their creature, the United States Incorporated, in its governmental, proprietary, or other capacity, to tax, assess, or take property from, or otherwise regulate the individual as a matter of want of jurisdiction. This then left the individual citizen or inhabitant free. But it also cut off expected revenues, which the conspirators among our founding fathers planned to get out of the pockets of the people, as well as their labor, and especially their life's credit. Life's credit. Now, back before the Civil War, a case called Dred Scott versus Sanford, cited at 9 Howe 393, decided in 1857, came up. And Dred Scott and like authority provide in effect that the state citizen is immune to any and all governmental attacks and a procedure absent contract. Well, let's notice contract, very important. Article 1, Section 10 of our Constitution here in the United States prohibits government from impairing the obligation of your contract. That same Article 1, Section 10 also is a property article, which deals with that Article 1, Section 10, no state shall make anything but gold or silver coin a tender in payment of debt. It's not an accident that hard money and contract appear in the same article. They go hand in hand. Your right to contract and your ability to pay and own and then use property is the fundamental right of liberty. And without it, you cannot be a free man. A free man has to have property. If he doesn't have property, he can't be free. And here in America, we don't own property. We have some property rights. We have some equitable interests in property. There is property. I'm not arguing that we don't have any property. But that doesn't mean that we have the absolute use, right, and control of that property. And that's the point if you don't have the absolute right to property, then for practical purposes, you don't have the property. You have a share in it. You have an interest in it. Take a look at your automobile. The definition of property of and by itself is an absolute right. Listen to this. Here's from Bouvier. Property, the right and interest which a man has in lands and chattels to the exclusion of others. It is the sole and despotic dominion which one man claims and exercises over the external things of the world in total exclusion of the right of any other individual in the universe. And I want to note the word in the universe, because if God Almighty himself claims it, then you can't own it. That's the bottom line. Now, there are some things here on planet Earth that the Creator himself has prohibited you from owning. Land is number one. In Leviticus 25, verse 23, he says, the land shall not be sold forever because it's mine. Bottom line. You can't buy, sell, and trade land because you don't own it. That's one example. You cannot have a property right in land. God Almighty himself prohibits that. Now, the state comes along and says, oh, no, no. God made a mistake. You can have a property right in land. We're going to give it to you. Now, it wasn't that God didn't give you a property right in land. He said you cannot have a property in land. Can't own the land. You can have right to the land. You can have use of the land. But you can't own the rock, the mineral, and the earth. That is mine. And he further goes on to say that the earth is his footstool. He said, the heavens my throne, the earth is my footstool. It's mine, keeping your hands off. All right, there's an example of it. Now, that doesn't mean that you can't have the gold and the silver and the wheat, corn, beans, honey, and oil and the brass that comes out of the ground and so on. Those are property rights. In fact, God doesn't even claim your children. He never said that those children are mine. He said the firstborn is mine. Now redeem him back. And then once you redeem him back, then he's yours. The state isn't quite that magnanimous. The state comes along and says, hey, we want you to register that birth with the state. That's what introduced a social lady into the equation. Social lady comes in, knocks on your door and says, hey, you're not educating this kid the way we want him educated. So we think we'll take him away from you, babysitter number one, and place him over here in foster care with babysitter number two. Now, you have a property right in your children. There's no doubt about that. The state even recognizes you have a property right, but you don't have absolute property, and that's my point. I want to own an automobile as property to the absolute exclusion of the state, period. End of report. Can you do that? And the answer is no. Well, and obviously, then we don't own property. We don't have the absolute right to property in an automobile. Same thing with your house. The registration on your car is the prima facie evidence that you're paying rent to the owner. And the property tax on your house is the prima facie evidence that you don't own the house because you're paying rent to somebody else. Now listen to this. If you don't pay that property tax, what happens to your house? Well, the real owner of the house is going to come take it away from you because you didn't pay your rent and evict you. And then sell it to somebody that will pay the rent. How do you like that? Same thing happens with your automobile. Now, Larry Beecraft, as far as he went, didn't lie to you. He said, hey, you've got a property right in your car. You do. You got a property right. There's a bundle of invisible property rights. And that's because the automobile is the subject of property in this case. And that's the point that I'm making here. By 1868, to remedy this, the 14th Amendment was adopted, which also gave corporations rights which they did not have prior to 1868, and which, coupled with a repeal of colonial early state constitution citizenship provisions, and B, not allowing any such provisions in any of the later states, has lowered whites to the level of blacks, making all national citizens and bond servants subject to the corporate state-controlled economy. All of them derive their citizenship from the 14th Amendment. So after 1868, with the enactment of the 14th Amendment, something very dramatic occurred to our property rights. That's my point. Something dramatic has occurred now to what we formerly had as property rights. What we had from the Ten Commandments, thou shalt not steal, you shall not have an unjust weight and balance in your bag, and so on. has now been altered. And over a long period of time, kind of like the story of the camel sticking his head into the tent, you know, over a long period of time, the camel's now taken over the tent and you and I are out in the sandstorm. I'd like to get back into the tent and throw the camel out. That's my point. Now, the 14th Amendment constitutes the breach of the said contract and agreement, which is what we call our Constitution, and it's a unilateral breach created by government. And the breach, however, has certain supposed benefits that attach thereto, which even though unilateral, created by one side, namely the combined states or the United States, if you and I acquiesce therein, it makes us beneficiaries thereof, with all of the attaching duties and liabilities, which also unilaterally developed and attached to the Uniform Commercial Code. All right? Put another way, if you and I accede to the demands that somebody makes upon us, well, then it's the equivalent of an agreement to. You know, you've agreed to it. When we look at something like citizenship, or we're looking at guardian-ward relationship as it relates to citizenship. Let me show you a little story here. The appointment of a conservator in a guardian-ward relationship. In several states, statutes authorize one person who, although of sound mind, when he believes that he's incapable of managing his own estate or of caring for his own property, he may apply for, request, or simply consent. Get that, simply consent to the appointment of a conservator or a guardian of his estate, or of his person, or both. And when this person is appointed, he possesses over the estate substantially the same powers and is subject in regard thereto to substantially the same duties as a guardian of an incompetent. Now let's go back here to the lady. Remember, she writes a letter to Larry Beecraft and she says, "Hey, the state's taking my automobile. They've got the manufacturer certificate of origin," and she thought that was the title to the car. Beecraft said, "That's not the title to the car." All right, both of them have a point. One, it's not the title to the car. But number two, it's got a lot to do with the title of the car, because this lady doesn't have a property, an absolute property in the car. She's got some property rights. She has this invisible bundle of rights. She has a right to use the car. But when the highway patrolman comes and takes the car, seizes it, and sends it off into impound, the state is taking its car. The state owns that car. It's been registered with the state. The state has title to the car. So where'd they get that? And how come we can't have it? Why can't we have a property, an absolute property right in the automobile? It's true, you've got a property right, like a chosen action, but you don't have absolute property. Remember, absolute property over here. Yes. The sole and despotic dominion which one man claims and exercises over the external things of the world in total exclusion of the right of any other individual in the universe. I want to exclude God Almighty from my car. And that includes the state of Missouri and the United States and everybody else. I want to own the car to the absolute exclusion of God Himself. And why can't I do that? God doesn't have any problem with me doing that, but the state of Missouri does. Why? What's their bitch in life? What's their interest in it? Now, there's a little bit more that goes with this thing called property, so let's take a look here. The latter, in a strict legal sense, land is not property, but it is the subject of property. You know, a lot of times people say, well, I own that car over there. Well, okay. If you said you owned that car is property. I own that house. Well, that house over there is property. That's my wife. Okay, well, that wife over there is property. I don't deny that. But there are some things over here that you don't have an absolute property right in. What you have is a right in the subject of property. And that's what you have with your automobile. You have been reduced from absolute and sole despotic ownership of the property to a subject of property in which you do have some invisible bundle of rights attached to the car. Let's try it out. You go down here and you rent a Hertz car. and somebody says to you, God, what a nice car you've got there, Bob. And you're quick to point out, well, it's not mine, it's a Hertz rental car. Why? Well, because you know that's not your car. And furthermore, that car doesn't belong to Hertz either. Hertz more than likely has leased that car from a flooring company. And then on top of that, the car has been registered with the state. And so the state has an interest in the car. So the flooring company has an interest, the state has an interest, and Hertz has an interest. And then you come along and rent the car. Hell, you've got an interest in it. You've got a higher and better interest than I do. If I come along and take your car and you report it to Hertz, Hertz reports it to the flooring company reports it to the state, and they come out there and say, hey, Gordon, you've stolen this Hertz car, and we're gonna prosecute you for auto theft. You've got an invisible bundle of rights that attach to the automobile. You rented it. But you know that you don't have an absolute property right. You couldn't take that car out and destroy it, could you? Could you take it out and just drive it off a bridge off into the estuary? Now, let's suppose that you, I think it was it Muhammad Ali? I think it was. He came back from the Olympics, and he got bummed out one day, and he took his Olympic medal, and he threw it into the ocean or the estuary, threw it into the river, threw it away. Can he do that? Well, of course, that was his medal. That was his property. He earned it, and it was given to him, and it was his property, and he exercised his sole and despotic dominion over that property, and he threw it away. All right. Can you do that to your house? Do you have the sole despotic dominion over your house? Can you just burn it to the ground? Oh, my God. Why, if you went out here and burned your house to the ground, you'd have the bank on you because you impaired their secured interest. You'd have the state and the fire marshal and everybody. Why? Well, the state views that as their property. Why? Well, because they've got a tax interest in it. They collect rent on that house every year. And the bank, that's the collateral for the note. All right, so much, you know, for calling this my house. It's true that you do have an interest in the house. I don't deny that. But you don't have a property in the house. That's the other point I'm making. You've got a subject of property in the house. Nothing more, nothing less. All right, now there's a bit more to this. In a strict legal sense now, land isn't property, but rather the subject of property. The term property, although in common parlance applied to a tract of land or a chattel in its legal signification, means only the right of the owner in relation to it. It denotes a right over a determinate thing. Property is the right of any person to possess, use, enjoy, and dispose of a thing. Now, you can do that with your car. You can possess it, you can use it, and you can sell it. But the state, who has a superior title to your automobile, prescribes to you the laws, rules, and regulations in which you can sell the car. For instance, here's a little trick. You have to put in the odometer reading. Well, wait a minute. Let's suppose that I own something over here. Let me pick something out here on my desk here. Here's a picture. And I want to sell this picture to you. And if the state can come along and say to me that I have to give you some kind of document guaranteeing that this picture has never had alcoholic beverages in it before, then if they can punish me or take the picture away from me or do something bad, wicked, terrible, awful, I now don't own the picture. And so if the state can come to you and make you put in the odometer reading here, which is probably good, it probably keeps you from lying to some guy and say, oh, well, I only drove this thing 50,000 miles, when in reality you turned the odometer back from 150,000 to 50. And okay, I don't deny that there's all kinds of goods that come out of it, but the fact that the state can require you to do that shows the state's got a property interest in your automobile. Where'd they get that? Where'd that start from? There are some things that we have a property right in that's absolute and despotic, and there's some things that we don't. So those things that we don't have this absolute despotic use, right, and power over, then who got that power, when and why and how? So the lady, writing to Larry Beecraft, jumps the gun. She says, well, this MCO, the Manufacturer Certificate of Origin, over here is the title to the automobile. It's the superior title. She's got a point. It's a part of the story. Not all of it. It's not the whole story, but it's a very vital part, and I think Beecraft missed that vital part. Going on over here, government retains title to all property that its corporations mine, refine, manufacture, and sell to consumers. And we, that is you and I, have no substantive. We have no inalienable rights. And we're living in government-owned homes, driving government-owned cars, and we're even wearing government-owned shorts, as far as the government and the government's courts are concerned, noting that one's life and liberty and person are meaningless without rights and property. Now, our Supreme Court in Lynch versus Household Finance Corporation back in 1975 made an observation. They said, you know, your liberty and your person are meaningless without rights and property. Property is the heart and soul of liberty. And without it, you can't have liberty. And that's why the very first plank to the Communist Manifesto calls for the abolition of property. Coming right out of the chute. First thing we got to do is take your property rights away from you, sucker. Now, once we take your property rights away from you, now I've got you. Because now I can regulate and control you. But, son, if you've got property, if you've got property rights, now you can have liberty. And we talk a lot about freedom and liberty and one thing and another, not knowing whereof we speak. That's the bottom line. Now, government, between 1890 and 1927, adopted what we call the law merchant as the supreme rule of property ownership and title. Now, we call that the Uniform Commercial Code. It's the UCC. And prior law, particularly documents of title and the provisions thereof. So, we have what we call titles of or documents of title. Title documents. Now, the bank does not have physical possession of the automobile. Now, at the common law, possession is the law. Wait a minute. The bank doesn't have to possess or have physical control over the automobile. They've got that in their document of title. So they've got a lien on the car. So if you'll look on your document of title issued by the state and the bank working together as partners against you, the taxpayer, consumer, alleged owner of the automobile over here, these two entities have a superior title to you. It's true, you got some property rights, but you don't own the automobile. The ultimate owner of the automobile is the state, and they got ultimate ownership through the registration and the certificate. That is that invisible bundle of rights that attach to that title called the Manufacturer's Certificate of Origin, which is a part and parcel of the Uniform Commercial Code. And Larry Beecraft identified that correctly. It has to do with commerce. But it sure as hell don't have anything to do with the Ten Commandments or thou shalt not steal. It has to do with the first plank to the Communist Manifesto, which calls for the abolition of all right to property, which has been carried out. And so your right to property has been suspended, but not totally. Your right to property, that is, the sole and despotic use of the property, has been suspended, but you still have an equitable interest in somebody else's car. Wait a minute. I'd like to have the same interest in the automobile that Muhammad Ali had over his Olympic gold medal. You know, if he wants to throw it away, it's his. Let him do it. If you want to burn your house to the ground, if you owned the house, you could probably do that. But, you know, the minute you burn your house to the ground, the state's going to be all over you because you've impaired their tax interest. Now, how did the state get an interest in your house to start with? Huh? Well, hell, you know they got an interest in it because they got a tax that you're paying every year called a property tax. It's actually an ad valorem tax, but that's a story for another day. But the moral of the story is, you know as well as I do, you burn your house to the ground, you're going to jail. Bottom line. End of the report. Even if you claim to own the house free and clear. Bank's got no claim to it. Well, the bank's out of the picture. That's true. Their interest ends when you paid off the mortgage, but the government's interest hasn't ended because they still collect property tax on it. And when you burn the house down, you're burning their interest in the house. Their superior interest, their superior title. Now, this law merchant and code law merchant title is called superior title. It means superior to mere possessory common law title. See, when you're in possession of something, we have what we call common law title. That's about the lowest evidence of title that you can have. So when we look up title in Bouvier's Law Dictionary, naked possession, the right to possess, and property are the three elements to title. Well, you don't have to have the naked possession of the property in order to own it. The state doesn't have naked possession of your car, but they own it, as evidenced by their two flags that you fly on each end of your vessel. The bank doesn't have to have naked possession of the automobile to regulate and control. In fact, take a look at your contract with the bank on your automobile, and there's a clause in there that says that you cannot take this automobile outside of your state without written permission from the bank. You probably didn't know that, but I just told you. Now go look it up in your own documents from the bank, your mortgage, your consumer loan from the bank, and you're going to find there's a clause in there. Now nobody follows that, and nobody really gets excited about it one way or the other. But the bottom line is, if you take that car out of the state, and the bank wanted to accelerate the note, they could. You're in breach of contract. All I have to do is find out that you did take it out of state at one point in time. Now, they do that with credit cards all the time. See, you're watching TV, and this guy's got perfect credit, never missed a payment on his credit card, and they jumped his credit rate because his credit interest charges from, say, 15% to 30%, and he's jumping up and down saying, well, but, hell, he agreed to that when he made the application for the credit card. He didn't know that, and people complain about it. But if you would read the terms and conditions of a credit card application, you'd have to be brain dead to sign that and agree to those terms and conditions. Well, you have to be brain dead, or you didn't read the terms and conditions. And so all you people that are running around out there with credit cards, you never read those terms and conditions, because they've reserved to themselves the right to raise the interest rate anytime they want. They don't have to have any reason to raise the rates of interest. So if your bank's charging you 10% interest on your credit card, that's just because they're nice guys. And if they want to charge you 20, it's no problem. They'll do it. And if they want to charge you 30, there's no problem. They can do that. If you make every payment perfectly and you've never been late and you've never missed a payment, so what? So what? Now, the same thing applies now to the government. You know, the government can be nice guys if they want to. They don't have to be. Social Security is a classic example. You have no property rights in Social Security. So says our Supreme Court in Halvering versus Nestor and Bowen versus agencies opposed to Social Security entrapment. The courts have weighed in on this a number of times. Social Security is a social welfare scheme, nothing more, nothing less. They can terminate the payments tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock. You don't get any complaints coming. You don't have any property rights in it. Now, you think you do. You wish you had. You'd like to, but you don't. That's the bottom line. Now, there's more to the story. We'll take that up when we come back. I got to give you a reminder here that you're listening to the Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, that's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives. All of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. And the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the law school at 417-273-4967. Again, it's area code 417-273-4967. Now, sometimes people ask me, they call me up and they say, hey, I ordered that last week and you didn't send it. And then, well, the reason you haven't got it yet is because I haven't sent it out yet. And then they want to know, well, when do you send those out? Well, I send them out about 3 or 4 times a year. And I'm about due to do that again. I sent out the last big batch in January, and now it's about 90 days later. Now, I've got a big stack over here of requests for those free CD packets. And a lot of times people want to know, well, why do you do that? Well, it's just my wife, myself, and my son that run this, and we don't have a whole staff of hot and cold running secretaries pouring coffee and blowing on my fevered brow. And on top of that, I'm old, fat, bald, and lazy. And so every once in a while, I get my hind end off my chair, and well, I guess I better send a bunch of these out. So in case you were wondering, how come I haven't got mine yet? Well, because I haven't sent it out yet. But be patient with me. In 25 years, I ain't missed yet. You'll get it. Just give me a little time. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct, at least to the best of our knowledge and belief. And the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. And we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements and recommendations that we're giving don't mean that the authors or the publications that we're endorsing are necessarily going to reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications cited here on the Law Hour and Editorial Review may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review either. Now, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. So if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about freedom of speech, and if you tuned in late, you're probably sitting there saying, what in the hell has freedom of speech got to do with the manufacturer's certificate of origin? And the answer to that is that last week we did a series of programs here on Larry B. Craft's destroyed arguments, of which a number of those destroyed arguments we subscribe to. Well, oftentimes people disagree with me. See, they'll write a paper and they'll say, that guy Gordon's stupid. There, he's dumb. Hell, I never denied it. But the moral to the story is, freedom of speech requires that we give a little deference to other people. So oftentimes a student will say, well, why do you have Larry B. Craft's destroyed arguments in there? When he contradicts you, Mr. Gordon, on two vital issues. One of them is the manufacturer's certificate of origin here. Well, Larry B. Craft's entitled his opinions too, you know. And after all, that's what freedom of speech is all about. Just because some guy says, hey, I think that guy's all wet, or I don't agree with his conclusions based upon this, that, or something else. So he got a letter from a lady on the manufacturer's certificate of origin, and so he wrote a piece on it, and he said, here's what I think about that. And it just so happens that I agree with this lady on some of her conclusions, but not all. And I ought to point that out, that oftentimes people come here to school, so, and they leave here, and they'll come up with various ideas and conclusions, one thing and another, and somebody will say, well, where did you get that idea? And they'll say, well, I got it from George Gordon at the Gordon Law School. And I'm here to tell you that's poppycock. A lot of crap that goes on out here in my name doesn't come from me, let me tell you. It comes from other students who are attending school here. For instance, the other day a guy was asking me about this thing that we talked about last week, which was this UCC merchant, law merchant, and straw man, you know, and one thing and another, and I covered a bunch of that for you. And people who come here to school subscribe to that straw man crap, see? And Larry Beecraft doesn't, and neither do I. So I agree with Beecraft on that point. But that doesn't mean that everything that somebody else says that I necessarily agree with. So in this case, I said, well, I want a dissent, at least in part, to this manufacturer's certificate of origin. Because, see, I got 5 students in California that went out, bought a car, and walked out with the MCO. Actually walked out with it. And when you do, you get a different result from the highway patrolman out there on the beat. Just like Robert Fox did down in Arlington, Texas. He bought a new car over in Mississippi, walked out with the MCO. Then when he got back home to Arlington, Texas, the policeman stopped him, seized his car, arrested him, and threw him in jail. Now, they prosecuted him. But they didn't prosecute him for not having a registration, a driver's license, or insurance on the automobile. That MCO did something a little bit different than the average Joe Sixpack would suspect. See, that MCO now showed that Robert Fox had a property right in the automobile. Not just an invisible bundle of property. Now, he's actually got a property right. The state doesn't own the automobile. How do you like that? We'll talk a little bit more about that as we progress along. But to bring you up to speed, and I just wanted to let you know that oftentimes we who espouse freedom of speech need to back off and let the other guy make his point, make his statement, and then we ought to be prepared to come in and say, okay, I disagree with that, I dissent, and here's my dissenting opinion. This oftentimes happens in the Supreme Court. The justices will write what they call a dissenting opinion. Okay, well, you guys are in the majority, but I don't agree with you. I think you're wrong, and here's why. Here's my legal argument. Here's why I think you're wrong. So I'm just simply saying to Larry Beecraft, I dissent, Larry. And here's why I dissent from your majority opinion. Oftentimes the majority of people will agree. Well, hell, oftentimes the majority of people are wrong. Did you know that sometimes, for instance, in World War II, you know, 80 million Germans supported Adolf Hitler? Did it ever occur to any of you that 80 million Germans, the vast majority, could be wrong? Hell, you people elected George Bush twice before you figured out that that was wrong. We made a mistake. That happens, you know, so don't get overly distraught over it, but once in a while the majority is in error. Now, further complicating these things, the government owns all property. And the reason that government owns all property is because you can't pay for it any longer. Can't pay for it. Now, we've talked about this a time or two, but I'm gonna hit upon it. You see, payment requires that you extinguish a debt. Extinguish the debt. So let me show you a little story here. When you go into a store and you buy something and pay for it with a $20 bill, it's not paid for. Now, you say, well, I own this shirt because I bought and paid for it. Well, you bought it. I don't deny that. But you didn't pay for it. Well, you might say, what do you call it then? People get kind of snotty, you know. when you contradict them, oh, they get mad. They get nasty. Sometimes they get violent. Hell, I don't make it this way. Don't get angry with me. This isn't true because George Gordon says it's true. Hell, it would be true if I'd never been born. You know, it doesn't depend upon me one way or the other or what I believe. Now listen to this. There's a distinction between a debt that's discharged and a debt that is paid. And people today, they don't pay their debts at law. They discharge their obligations in equity under the Uniform Commercial Code with commercial paper called Federal Reserve Notes or the national currency of your country, wherever you may live. So you people who used to pay your debts at law with gold coin no longer do that. Well, when you don't pay your debts, then there's an outcome that comes from that. When you register your car, there's an outcome that comes from that. When you buy your car and you don't get the manufacturer's certificate of origin, there's an outcome. And if you get the manufacturer's certificate of origin, you get a different outcome. That's all. There's a different outcome. Going on, when your debt is discharged, the debt continues to exist even though it has been divested of its original character as a legal obligation during the operation of the discharge. Something of the original vitality of the debt continues to exist, which may be transferred, even though the transferee takes it subject to its disability incident to the discharge. Now, the fact that the debt carries something which may be a consideration for a new promise to pay, so as to make an otherwise worthless promise a legal obligation, it makes it the subject of transfer by assignment. Now, that may sound a little obfuscated to you. It comes from a case called Stanek versus White, cited at 172 Minnesota 390. The judge explained it, maybe not as clearly as the average truck driver would like it explained. So let me give you a little story. Let me see if I can explain it a little clearer for you. When I was a little kid, my dad used to send me down to Harry Connick's Corner Grocery. See, in the old days, we didn't have supermarkets. About every four blocks, there was a little grocery store. See? And so we went down to our little grocery store, Harry Connick's Corner Grocery. And because of my youth and inexperience in the business world, my dad did not like to send me with money for fear that some big bully might come along and take away 35 cents from me. See? So my dad would send a 3x5 business card, or a 3x5 card, or he'd send a little scrap of paper, and he would write on the paper. Now, see, I'm only 5 years old, so I'm not really sure exactly what he wrote on there, but it probably said something like, "Dear Harry, please give little Georgie a loaf of bread and a quart of milk. Signed, Daddy Gordon." And maybe a little postscript, you know, "P.S. I'll pay you when I see you." So my daddy would give me the note, and I would trundle on down to Harry's Corner Grocery, and I'd walk up to the counter, and I'd put the note up on the counter, and Harry would take it, and he'd read it with great wisdom and dignity, and then he'd go get the bread and milk. And then he'd bring the bread and milk over to the counter. He'd put it in a bag. Then he would call me, and I would follow him dutifully to the door of the store. And then he would tuck that bag up under my arm. "You got good hold of that, little Georgie?" Yep, I got good hold of it, Harry. And then he would say, "All right, now you go right straight home, little Georgie, and you take this to your daddy." So I would leave Harry's store, and I would start walking up H Street to my house, about a half a block away. Now, legal question arises. When little Georgie leaves Harry's store, who owns the bread and milk? Who owns that bread and milk? Harry has not been paid. He has a note. Hell, that may even be a negotiable instrument. He might be able to take that note and sell it to somebody who might in turn sell it to somebody who might in turn sell it. Hell, I think could transfer his money through the community if, if, if we were using warehouse receipts and if people wanted to take it, they could probably take that. My dad was pretty good at paying his bills. Now, typically, we need an endorsement on the back of the note, you know, so the guy that took the note would endorse it, and then the next guy would endorse it. It's kind of what you do with a check, you know. Now, let's think about this pragmatically. Now, little Georgie's in possession of the bread and milk, but is little Georgie the owner of the bread and milk? Does little Georgie have the despotic power to sit down on the curb and drink the milk and eat the bread without any consequences because he has a natural right to the bread and the milk? I don't know. I never did try that. I suspect had I done that, my daddy might have corrected me. Well, let's ask this. Does Harry have a right to the bread and milk? Or does my dad have the right to the bread and milk? Now, think about it. My dad is not in possession of the bread and milk. He hasn't paid for the bread and milk. Little Georgie hasn't paid for it, but he's in possession. Harry hasn't been paid for it, but he doesn't have possession either. All right, so now, how do we get property? And the answer is, we get property by alienation. You have to alienate yourself from the property. Now, Harry has alienated himself from his property. 3 minutes ago, he owned that bread and milk. It was in his store, and he had the sole and despotic power over it. He could have ate the bread and drank the milk. But now, he took a note, put it in his cash register. He's waiting for Daddy to pay him someday. Hell, he doesn't even know when Daddy's going to pay him. He accepted the terms and conditions of this contract prescribed by my daddy. All right, here's the answer to the riddle. Little Georgie doesn't own the bread and milk, even though he's in possession of it, because he's an agent of the principals. Principals. Harry Connick and my dad are the principals. They made a contract. My dad tendered an offer. Harry Connick accepted the offer. Over time. It's indefinite, but I'll pay you when I see you. So I presume that the next time my dad lays eyes on Harry, the debt's due and payable. And there's consideration. We don't have a specifics consideration. It doesn't say 35 cents. It says, I'll pay you when I see you. Harry's going to tell him what the price is, and my dad's going to pay him when he gets ready. So we've got a contract. It's got an offer with an acceptance over time with consideration. Little Georgie's not a part and parcel with the contract. He's an agent. Just like Greyhound Package Express is the agent. They don't own the package. They're in possession of it. They don't own it. They have a property right in the package. They're entitled to get paid for transporting the property. Now, the guy that owns this bread and milk, from the moment that Harry alienated himself from the property, the bread and milk, when he said, Little Georgie, step over my threshold. As the agent of your daddy, I'm alienating myself from my property. The property now belongs to my dad, who hasn't paid for it and doesn't possess it. The state hasn't paid for your car, and they don't possess it, but they own it. And it comes from the Uniform Commercial Code, which comes from the first plank to the Communist Manifesto, which comes from your alienation from your property rights. Now, how do you like that? And this is called an adhesion contract. Adhesion contract. It's a contract in which you don't know the terms and conditions of it. That's just special. Yeah, you don't know the terms and conditions. It's called an adhesion contract. Now, Larry Beecraft knows about adhesion contracts, and when he said that, you know, when you get the title to this car is your property. Well, that's all true. I don't deny it. But it isn't the whole truth, Larry. You didn't tell the whole story. There's more to the story. That's my complaint here. And, yeah, it's true. The manufacturer's certificate of origin isn't the whole story. But it's a valuable part of the story, just like payment. Now, Franklin Roosevelt, back in the 1930s, one of the first things they did during the banking crisis last time around was that they took gold out of circulation. A very important reason for that. If you're going to implement the first plank to the Communist Manifesto, my God, the first thing you got to do is take people's right to property away from them. And so the first thing you do is take their ability to pay for things away from them and put them in debt. That's why you're in such trouble today, all you people out there in the world. Hell, you people are all in debt. Furthermore, you don't even own the stuff that you're claiming is your property. You don't own your house. You don't own your car. It is true, you got an equitable interest in it, but here's your problem. You don't own it. The bank does. The state does. And they're going to dictate to you. The day is coming, boys and girls, when you are all going to line up to get a mark in your right hand and your forehead. You will not only accept it, you will stand in line and fight for it. Because without it, you won't be able to buy, sell, or trade. You won't be able to go into a Walmart store. You won't be able to pay for your goods unless you have that mark. I knew that because God Himself told us that that's what's coming. That's the natural result of turning away from the Ten Commandment model and adopting the Ten Plank model. Now, in ancient times, we didn't call this the Ten Planks to the Communist Manifesto. We called this the Babylonian Mystery Religion. Babylonian Mystery Religion. It was also known as the Assyrian Mystery Religion. And the Egyptians practiced it. The Romans practiced it. They called it Mithraism. Christians practiced it. They call it Christianity. Jesus said, "You'll know them by their fruit." You'll know them by what they do. Just take a look and watch them. The Christians, the Russians, Chinese, Muslims, hell, they all practice the same thing. They all practice the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto. Got license plates on cars all around the world. What if I wanted to own an automobile? Somebody says, "Well, the reason you got a license plate on there is so that the police can find your car if somebody steals it." What a crock of BS. BS. The state has a license plate on there so that they can regulate and control and tax you using their car. That's the real reason. But they got to have a reason. You can't just tell you, "Well, because we want to own your car and deprive you of all right to property." Hell, if government told you the truth as to what their motives were, you probably wouldn't buy into it. A con man doesn't tell you the truth. He lies to you. Makes you believe what he wants you to believe. That's what the bottom line to that's all about. Take a look. The Messiah said, "You'll know them by their fruit." So when you see people sending their children to public school, that's the 10th plank to the Communist Manifesto. When you see people filing and paying income tax, they're practicing the 2nd plank to the Communist Manifesto. When they have a credit card and they have a checking account, they're practicing the 5th plank to the Communist Manifesto. When they have a Social Security account number, they're practicing the 8th plank to the Communist Manifesto. When they're registering their automobiles and licensing them and paying property tax, they're practicing the 1st plank to the Communist Manifesto, which calls for the abolition of all right to property. So what we have here then, in place of your property right, we have a superior title vested in somebody else. And the manufacturer's certificate of origin is a valuable part of the process of creating superior title in somebody else. Which we'll talk about more next time on the Law Hour and Editorial Review. But meanwhile, I'm out of time, and I've got to remind you that you've been listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly and has a radio log schedule and archives. All of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Hey, our time's up. I got to leave it right there. So we'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.